Welcome to this afternoon's presentation of the Council of Public Affairs. My name is Kathy Coates, and I'm the moderator for today. Just a couple of housekeeping duties before we start. The first is to please remember to pay for the session and your lunch. There should be a basket on your table, and the cost is $10. And we'll ask one person on the table to take responsibility for counting up and making sure the right amount's in there. SACPA is a volunteer nonprofit organization, and so we always are appreciative of any contributions or help that you can give to us. Along those same lines, we're very thankful for our partners, Shaw TV, the University of Lethbridge, and to Erickson's Restaurant, who prepares the lunch. We're going to have a presentation first for about 30 minutes, and I know it's going to include a DVD, so I hope you can see the screen or be able to shift somewhere so you can see the screen. We'll then have lunch for 25 minutes or so, give you time to ponder and talk about what you've just heard, and then there will be a question period of about 30 minutes. Those are all mine. So I'm very happy to introduce to you Dr. David Swan. David is going to be talking about oil wealth and genuine progress, and where's that balance between the wealth and the progress? Will the bounty of the oil sands in northern Alberta be a blessing, or will it be a curse to future generations? I met David several years ago when he was a theme speaker at a conference we were both at, and found him to be a very engaging and interesting speaker. He's been a doctor in this province and abroad for over 30 years and actually entered politics after he was fired by the Palliser Health Region for his public speaking out, his public support of a national energy policy to reduce fossil fuel use. So with that, I'll let him say the rest about himself that he wants to share, and I invite you all to give a warm welcome to Dr. David Swan.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation to come down. We've had an exciting day already. Our Liberal caucus has been here meeting with City Council, and in my case, as the Shadow Environment Minister for the Alberta Liberal caucus, I've met with some environment groups, Cheryl Bradley and others with SAGE and other representative groups, and the new bioenergy, biofuel group with economic development that's been formed, representing 36 communities in southern Alberta, trying to examine a more sustainable future for energy and being perhaps the leading alternate energy region in the province, which I hope you'll take up very seriously. As I have come to know the provincial energy ministers in the last two iterations, it's clear that they see energy as equal or equivalent to fossil fuels. So it's high time we helped to find an energy minister who understands that energy is beyond fossil fuels. In fact, Mr. Melchin, who was last in that position, said to me in his office one day, "Well, don't talk to me about alternative energies. My mind is totally full of getting fossil fuels out faster and cleaner. We are the fossil fuel capital of the world," was his statement. He couldn't see the importance of moving beyond fossil fuels. So the last time I was here was, I suppose, just before the Gulf War, and I was speaking about my work with a number of groups trying to make sure that we did not, as Canadians, get into Iraq. And I'm pleased to say that the Prime Minister of the time, Mr. Chrétien, did withhold Canadian support on the ground for the Iraq War. And the connection for me is, again, that a lot of what we do in Alberta, in Canada, is directed by the United States of America. And we are their primary source of fossil fuels. So if we think we're making independent decisions here on our own best interests, either as Canadians or Albertans, we need to think again. There's a very strong driver of everything we do. It's not only George Bush himself, but it's the North American Free Trade Agreement that has now captured our foreign policy in relation to energy production and ensured that we will, in perpetuity, continue to provide the same or more energy to America unless we also reduce our energy production for Canadian uses. We are locked into an agreement that will ensure that we continue to serve the American interests, which happen to be very much more imperialistic than many of us in Canada are comfortable with, and are now being drawn deeper and deeper into a security and prosperity partnership, the SPP, with America, that will certainly determine much more of our domestic policy on energy, on environment, and on economic development. So that's just a preamble to some of the things I wanted to say today about the need for discrimination between genuine progress and economic development. This government continues, in my view, to be confused about the distinction between genuine wealth and economic development. And that's what we're going to talk about in relation to the oil sands. My subtitle for this is, What Do Albertans Want? And perhaps a subtitle would be, And Who Cares What Albertans Want? There's a real opportunity for leadership in this province. That's another way of saying we've been absent leadership in this province for at least a decade and a half, in my view. Fossil fuels have provided tremendous opportunities as well as increasing liabilities for this province and for the planet. And I illustrate it with, if we had time to talk more about climate change and the concerns that all of us have about the future and how our young people need to get more engaged in these issues and help us to put the urgency on this issue that it needs. Alberta has an opportunity to lead the world, in energy efficiency, in green, renewable energy, and in environmental stewardship. We continue to be the laggard. We continue to be the embarrassment. We continue to be a huge liability on the planet. And we are going to start paying a price in international relations, in boycotts, in challenges to the way we're doing business in Alberta. We only have to look at examples like the Maclean's magazine that described us as the source of Armageddon, environmental Armageddon, John Marsden's book, Stupid to the Last Drop, and some of the toxic Alberta videos that are circulating in the U.S. out of New York that describe what we as the primary energy producers in North America are doing to the environment and threatening the future of the planet. Governments are responsible for diverse development and balances, diverse development that balances short and long-term local and global interests. Our governments have forgotten that fact. Short and long-term both need to be balanced. Local and global responsibility needs to be addressed. The appetite for oil is growing on the planet. The demands, the supply is grossly outpaced by the demand, and oil will continue to be a treasured commodity on the planet. It reached an all-time high today, as I understand it, the price of oil. I have here at $93. I think it's gone higher than that today. 95 point something today. It's only going one way. So for those oil companies that feel chagrined at the royalty increases, we'll shed the odd crocodile tear for them. But I think the clear message is that they are in the right business in the short term, but there is a war on carbon on the planet, and if they don't see the writing on the wall and start to diversify, as Albertans must, and the government of Alberta must lead the way, unless we diversify, we are going to go the way of the dinosaur, and we are not going to be leaders in anything in Alberta. Current output of the oil sands is 1 million barrels a day. I just can't get my head around 1 million barrels. One day. And that's only one-fifth of a target of the Alberta government for 2030 at 5 million barrels a day. We're exceeding all of the predictions. Can you advance that? Doesn't seem to be. A bit of a background on the oil sands. Many of you know the deposits make up a total surface area of about 23% of the province. It's massive. When you think about the Fort McMurray area, the Lloydminster area, and the Peace River area together, a quarter of the province and about a third of Canada's total oil production will ultimately come out of there. using today's technology, they talk about 175 billion barrels of oil, ultimately. Now, one barrel of oil requires about the sifting through, digging and sifting through of 4 tons of material, consumes 2 to 5 barrels of water and a half barrel equivalent of natural gas, meaning that we use about 50% of the energy needed just to get it out that we would use for other, could use for other purposes. A marginal return, using clean fuel to develop a less than clean fuel with much more significant environmental impacts. The impact of the oil sands on the environment is inadequately measured. I think it's fair to say that we don't understand the full impact in terms of acid rain, local impacts on the communities in which it's being developed, in terms of sulfates and nitrates, and not certainly on the water consumption and the water impacts. The CO2 emissions are of serious concern with climate change crashing in on us, with Alberta now the largest contributor to greenhouse gases in the country, approaching 40% of Canada's greenhouse gas emissions. And this is expected, obviously, to double by 2015 if we continue at the pace of growth in the oil sands that we have today. Boreal forest is being lost in a massive way. Boreal forest, of course, is part of our carbon sink and part of reducing the impact of carbon emissions on the planet, and we are actually eliminating it as fast as any place on Earth, including the Amazon jungle. The land reclamation of the mining sites, the surface mining sites, is uncertain, as is the management of the tailings ponds, which now constitutes 50 square kilometers of the north. And these are toxic water lakes that have no ability to support life and, in fact, have on them human-formed scarecrows and guns that go off every few seconds to keep birds from landing on the water. No one's clear yet, even the researchers at the University of Alberta, when last I spoke to them, about how to reclaim this massive area of wasteland. But everyone is hopeful that a new technology will be developed and will manage to deal with these without them leaking too badly into the Athabasca River. I passed through Fort McMurray on a canoe this summer with some 34 other Albertans who wanted to float from Fort McMurray up to Fort Mackay, the first Indian band downstream, and saw firsthand the proximity of these massive lakes of toxic waste to the Athabasca River. It's within 50 meters, some of the largest of these lakes, and I climbed over to see one and was quite frightened, actually, to be seen inside the perimeter where we were not supposed to enter, but to recognize just how little it would take of a natural disaster or a failure of the liner of some of these big dams to actually start flowing into the river and damage the rivers forever. The Athabasca River will be threatened if it's not already significantly impacted, and it's difficult to get figures from Alberta Environment on some of the changes that have occurred in the river. It's always had hydrocarbons in it because it's in the water course is running right through the oil sands. But the question is, how much of it is now refined hydrocarbons, how much of it is toxic metals, and how much of it has increased as a result of the activity in the area? And indeed, how is it affecting fish? How is it affecting the human population further to the north in Fort Mackay and Fort Chip, where I also visited and found tremendous concerns of the First Nations people about what we're doing and what we think is in their best interests and when we're going to start listening to First Nations people and some of their priorities, some of their concerns. Well, there have been deep cuts in Alberta Environment, and when we talk about the environmental impacts of the oil sands, for example, and what legacy we're leaving to not only the north, but to our children generally, one has to take into consideration that this government invests less than 0.7% of the budget in Alberta Environment, in spite of the fact that we have unprecedented development in the province, and almost no capacity to properly assess developments before they get into place or monitor them after they're in place or enforce some of the legislation that is reasonable. So we have emasculated the capacity of Alberta Environment to actually do its job. William Donahue, one of the water scientists in the province who works with David Schindler, indicated in his recent paper that gathering data is the most important thing, period. We do not have the data in order to make good decisions about either proceeding with a development or slowing down a development once it's going or stopping a development when it's reached the limit of the carrying capacity in a particular environment. Fundamentally, what we measure, we value. And if we don't measure it, we don't value or manage it. And that's been a problem in this province ever since I can remember. I wanted to show you a little bit about the absence of leadership. I know this will be seen to some extent as a partisan presentation, and virtually it is. I'm giving you the goods from Hansard. When I asked the minister, first of all the premier, about the pace and scope of development in the province and how it might be good for business in the short term but not responsible and will not sustain our water supplies, particularly into the future, the criticisms of the Rosenberg Report, an international panel of water experts who reviewed our water management in the province, was very critical of the lack of knowledge and action in Alberta, as I said, in the House, and identified Alberta as taking real risks for the future. But the Premier has said that he would not put the brakes on development in the province. So my question to the Premier was, how does the Premier explain to fellow farmers this uncontrolled growth? Well, Mr. Stelmach responded, Mr. Speaker, as one that has grown various crops in this province of Alberta, we do depend on the good Lord to give us a sprinkle from time to time to grow our crops. I mean, without rain, we don't have any crops. To the Environment Minister, compounding this concern is a perception that I heard directly from a senior environmental bureaucrat at a conference in which he indicated, I quote, the role of Alberta Environment is not to advocate for the environment, but to mediate the interests of industry with the interests of the community. As if community has the capacity to adequately assess the long-term health and environmental impacts of these developments. The minister, now Mr. Renner, said, well, I would say that I would agree with the statement to the extent that it's not the role of Alberta Environment to advocate on behalf of the environment. I say I'm advocating on behalf of Albertans. I am empowering Albertans to take control on their own, to provide them with the ability to have that local control, to make those decisions at the local level from an informed perspective. Don't you feel better having been empowered by the Minister of the Environment? What do we pay the government to do, is my question. We currently measure progress narrowly in terms of how our gross domestic product is increasing. To log our forests and alter the landscape, we do see an increase in our gross domestic product. Everybody we pay to log or to divert a stream or to stop a forest fire adds to our gross domestic product. Is that a measure of progress? With short and long-term effects taken into consideration, is there a net gain to the oil sands development, is the question that we're asking today. Genuine progress has to do with social and environmental impacts beyond the gross domestic product. And with thanks to the Pembina Institute, they've put together a number of wonderful indicators to help us decide on a broader sense of well-being what real progress means. And it's called the Genuine Progress Indicators. They combine social, environmental, and economic indicators to distinguish short-term economic activity, what we call GDP, from genuine progress, responsible growth, which aims to not compromise our future generations or environmental integrity. And those are some 51 indicators that the Pembina Institute has helped us to look at in terms of measuring genuine progress. It has to do with, well, what's happening to the levels of poverty, for example. What's the level of volunteerism in a community? And how has the economic growth affected that, if at all? What are the level of taxes? What is our diversity? What are the alternative forms of energy that we're using? And what is the long-term impact on a river, for example, its capacity to support life or to support fundamental people's needs? What is voter participation? What's the crime rate? All of these have to do with genuine progress as opposed to bottom-line economic measurement, which this government has been fundamentally committed to. And this is the last slide on that area, which has to do with the Pembina Institute's assessment of genuine progress in Alberta. And about 1988, the gross domestic product line, which is the dark line, which has had a tremendous growth over the past 50 years. Actually, that goes back to 1961, is it? So the last 50 years. The dark line going from left to right, up, straight up, has shown a tremendous growth in gross domestic product. Everyone would be pleased with that on their government books. On the other hand, the measurements of social and environmental well-being, you can see, have slowly dwindled downwards, and they actually cross about 1988, where we actually see a decline in quality of life in Alberta by their measurements, by those 51 indicators, beginning in 1988. So 20 years ago, we actually saw that crossover. That's an important concept to get into our heads, and that's an important way of thinking for government leaders. Can you, Matt, advance that? Thanks. So we put all our eggs in one basket. I think we're all aware of that. We still have no significant diversification, at least in the energy sectors in Alberta. We have some economic diversification in terms of agriculture, forestry, but very limited. This oil and gas sector has been our lifeblood and now contributes 40% to our provincial budget. Is it any wonder that the Premier caved in on the royalty question when he understands where his bread is buttered and how challenged he's been over the last month hearing from the energy sector? Just to get our fair share has been an impossible task for this Premier by his actions. The government of Alberta has not prepared the province of Alberta for a post-oil future. We are extremely vulnerable to this war on carbon, and I would argue some of the boycotts and surcharges that are coming out of other countries, including California and the European Union, when we fail to produce fossil fuels without the heavy environmental impact that it's producing. The oil sands present a tremendous opportunity, and it needs to be managed responsibly. It is not being managed responsibly today. Now is a good time to diversify our economy and become a world leader in conservation and renewable energy technology. And finally, what will become of Alberta when the finite resource is gone? It is not at all clear to us that there is a plan and that there is a realistic approach to solving some of this future question. We've been leaving way too much to chance in Alberta, and many in government believe that new undiscovered technologies will come along and allow us to reclaim land and make the adjustments that we need to make and reduce our environmental impact. I, for one, do not believe that we can leave this to chance or that we can leave this to new technologies. This is a fundamental question of leadership, of responsibility, of good science, and prudent, precautionary development. We have abdicated our responsibility to the people of Alberta, to the people of Canada, to the citizens of the world now in relation to climate change. Leadership has been lacking, and it's time for a change of government, as far as I'm concerned, and as partisan as that may sound. In conclusion, I quote Richard Wright from A Short History of Progress. How many of you have read his excellent book, A Short History of Progress? A few of you. Wonderful read, easy read, and analyzes the rise and fall of civilizations throughout history and how we continue to fail to look at limits and responsibly manage within limits. And that is the sine qua non of irresponsible governance is this government's unwillingness to recognize limits. We are next week in the legislature going to look at another two water basin transfers, one from the Athabasca to the North Saskatchewan and another from the North Saskatchewan to the Red Deer River, because we have not been willing to live within limits.